Time is precious, and so are our pets. So time with our pets is extra precious. That's why we started Dutch. Dutch provides 24/7 access to licensed vets with unlimited virtual visits and follow-ups for up to 5 pets. You can message a vet at any time and schedule a video visit the same day. Our vets can even prescribe medication for many ailments, and shipping is always free. With Dutch, you'll get more time with your pets and year-round peace of mind when it comes to their vet care.
Is CBS Eye on the World with John Batchelor. Here's John Batchelor.
This is CBS Eye on the World. I'm John Batchelor. I welcome Ben and Ben Talibu, Senior Fellow of the Foundation for the Defense of Democracies, focusing on Iran. The immediate story is a BBC report that American-made equipment, the MRAPs, those gigantic trucks, as well as the up-armored AMVs and other sophisticated equipment turned over to the Afghan National Army before the collapse, has been seen on the roadways in Iran. That's right, Iran. Why this is significant is that Iran and Kabul, the Islamic Republic of Iran and the momentary Islamic Emirate of Afghanistan, are at this moment deciding whether they're friends or foes or frenemies and whether they're going to work together, because there are in Syria now many Afghans who were recruited by Iran to fight in Syria. They are Shia. And if you recall, there can be conflict between Shia and Sunni, between Pashtun Sunni and Shia, between ISIS, the rogue in the story. So I begin with the question of this equipment in Iran. Do we have an understanding, Benham, of how the Taliban and Tehran are working or not working together right now? Good evening to you.
A very good evening to you, John. About 2 decades ago, Iran and the Taliban almost went to war. A little after that, you know, in the present, in 2021, Iran and the Taliban are doing more than playing footsie. They're trying to transform the past 2 decades of experience of two entities sharing a border with one another with an overwhelming interest in baiting, bleeding, cutting, and killing Americans in the Middle East and in South and Central Asia. That is what has brought these two forces together, their overwhelming interest in baiting, bleeding, cutting, and killing Americans. And this is what has changed the nature of their relationship. But with the departure of those forces, there is the potential for some sort of backslide. And with the photos that you have spoken about that I have seen online via social media, whose authenticity I cannot confirm, but if they are even remotely authentic, there is great worry that the Taliban and Iran are moving from that game of footsie that we had talked about, where they coordinated against Washington again to kill Americans, but to something of more of an embrace. You know, lest we forget, the sale, supply, or transfer of these kind of military grade equipment is prohibited to the Islamic Republic, and it's all the more reason to worry about what happens when the U.S. suddenly uproots and leaves. No defeat. Not political, not military, not economic, ever exists in a vacuum. And a burgeoning Iran-Taliban relationship is something Washington should be concerned about.
More mysteries. There have been for weeks and weeks repeated mentions of Iran in conversation with Saudi Arabia. Again, these are contestants in a vast civil war contest in Yemen and in Syria and throughout the Gulf. Opponents who've been using surrogates. These reported talks have been going on since early summer at least. And now that there's a new government, Raisi, the hanging judge, and a new foreign minister, is there a turn of the page? Are these talks with Saudi Arabia to be reignited? And what's in it for Iran?
Well, I certainly have concerns about what were once private, back-channel, bilateral Saudi-Iranian talks, because ultimately, if you look at the foreign and security policy behavior of the U.S., really starting in 2019, It has signaled to our Arab partners on the other side of the Persian Gulf that the U.S. doesn't have staying power, that it has the capability to contest Tehran, but it doesn't necessarily have the resolve to contest Tehran. And you saw that with the lack of response to the downing of a U.S. drone in the summer of 2019, and then the lack of a kinetic response to the cruise missile and drone strikes by Iran against the world's most important oil facility in eastern Saudi Arabia in September 2019. So these moves were specific by Iran because they were designed to not force the Gulf states to all of a sudden ditch their American partners, but to get them to realize that America may not be the trustworthy partner and that America may not always have their back. There was a statement Rouhani said that same September 2019 at the UN General Assembly. He said an Arabic proverb, which is Adar Thumma Ajar, which is first the neighbor, then the house. Iran was saying that their neighbor, Iran, is upset that they had forsaken their friendly, quote-unquote friendly neighborly relations and brought in foreign forces into the region and forsaken in an attempt to secure their house. But their bringing of foreign forces into the region is actually, in the Iranian proverb here, destabilized the house. So Iran has always looked for creative ways to get the Arab states to hedge away from America and to increasingly be forced to accommodate Tehran. And what you see in this growing bilateral engagement between some of those states and Iran, most of them private, is that they fear what could happen with return of the JCPOA nuclear deal. They fear how long the U.S. will remain in the region and if it will radically uproot its defense posture there. And they don't want to be caught in the fangs of a rising hegemon like the Islamic Republic. And so this could be one way for them to try to diplomatically adjudicate that conflict. But the problem is, of course, that the Iranians are playing what the Italians call politica del carciofi, which is the politics of the artichoke, deal with your adversaries one at a time. And what they're looking to do right now is rope-a-dope the crown jewel of the Gulf Cooperation Council. They want to rope-a-dope Saudi Arabia and take a rope-a-dope Saudi Arabia into letting them get their guard down and ultimately trying to force accommodation writ large by the GCC of Iranian power. So I am very skeptical of where these talks could go.
Some time ago, and it might have been 2019, everything fades into one long pandemic wait. There was a cartoon-like presentation we were told that came with the imprimatur of MBS himself, Mohammed bin Salman, the titular guide of Saudi Arabia, imagining a conquest of Tehran. Do you recall that? We all saw it online. And there was no denial from Riyadh, and it was very much a provocative cartoon, how we're going to roll over. My memory is roll over Tehran, unless it was Tehran rolling over Riyadh. In any event, the cartoon very much encapsulated the fact that these are young, forceful powers who dislike each other intensely. Is it part of the Gulf world that you sit with your worst enemies and talk for a long time? What does Saudi Arabia get out of it?
Well, Saudi Arabia doesn't want to get caught in the crosshairs here. So I think these are by default weapons of the weak. The Saudis, as well as other U.S. partners in the region, have every right to, you know, with immense respect, doubt the longevity of the U.S. partnership based on what you've seen coming out of Afghanistan. Plus, of course, the ferocity of the JCPOA debate in the U.S., pro or anti, and the zero-sum nature of that debate about returning for Democrats and leaving for Republicans, puts our partners in the region who have a decidedly anti-Islamic Republic stance in the region and are afraid of the regime's nuclear and non-nuclear threats. And they're on the fault line. They're doing everything they can to not be caught in the crosshairs. It's understandable, but it's unfortunate because it needn't have been this way. Now, there's no formal agreement. There's no speculation as to how those talks would have gone. But I guarantee you what Tehran is doing is trying to prove to these folks the line of Qasem Soleimani in 2010, which is, this is what he told an Iraqi official in 2010, reportedly, and it was printed in the New Yorker in 2013. And this is a line about Iran, which is, quote, "We're not like the Americans. We don't abandon our friends." You know, the Iranians actually believe they've bested the Arab world in Syria by continuing to surge men, money, and munitions in defense of the butcher of Damascus, Bashar al-Assad. Now the Saudis want to get out of the conflict in Yemen. They're trying to change the posture in the region. And they believe that they may need to broker this change through Tehran. You know, Washington hasn't necessarily stepped up for them in that conflict. When you look at the things that happened earlier this year, such as the delisting of the Houthis from foreign terrorist organization lists and the immense political pressure that was put on Saudi Arabia intentionally by the Biden administration.
I'm speaking with Benham Bentaleblou about what we know of Iran in its own region under the new president, Raisi, the hanging judge. Afghanistan and Saudi Arabia are two big unknowns. However, there is a new protagonist for Iran, the new foreign minister, Hossein Amir Abdollahian. When we come back, what is the significance of the new foreign minister's visit to Damascus, to the Assad regime? This is CBS Eye on the World. I'm John Batchelor.